Well, here we are on Easter Sunday, the very best day of the year, as I frequently describe it, because it is. It's better than my birthday, it's better than my anniversary, better than the first day of school and the last day of school all rolled into one. Why? Well, there's a lot of reasons why, and we're going to talk about some of those reasons, but as you may have noticed, if you've been following me along for the last few weeks, maybe months, we've been looking at some things that we thought we knew, and we knew something about, and realized that what we thought we knew might not have been everything that was there to be seen. I think particularly of our discussion about the story of Lazarus, that there were some things there that perhaps we hadn't considered before. And I've been doing this off and on for the last little while. I've been looking at things that I think I know to see if I actually know them. And thankfully, often I do. But often there are things that I'm missing. And so I was thinking about Easter and asked, well, what does it mean? After the sermon title comes, and it is Easter. It's Easter Sunday. We're celebrating it. We're together. We're happy. But what does Easter mean? And by the way, I don't think that you're wrong, whatever you're thinking when that pops to your head. But I just thought, this gives us a focus, a way of thinking about today and what it might mean for us. So when we're thinking about what things mean, it's sometimes helpful to think about what it doesn't mean. And Easter does not mean that we are following the example or listening to the story of a magician. Someone like David Copperfield, only in a robe. Jesus didn't just pretend to die and then sneak out the back way out of the tomb with the help of an assistant or anything like that. We're not looking at following someone who achieved this notoriety through trickery in any way, shape, or form. You'll sometimes hear people tell you that. What you also sometimes hear is that, well, it was all a big mistake because Jesus just fainted. And that because it's a hard day, it's difficult things. He fainted, he came back to consciousness and snuck away. Well, the problems with that one are significant, not least of which is Jesus was pronounced dead by a Roman soldier when he was taken down. And the Roman soldiers did a lot of things, but their primary task was taking living human beings and turning them into dead human beings. And they were extremely good at it. I myself have seen very few dead bodies, so I'm not going to say that I could not be fooled by someone who had fainted into thinking they were dead or vice versa. What I will say is that no Roman soldier, certainly no centurion, would ever make that mistake. So let's put that one from our mind. And those people who will tell you, it's commonly referred to as the swoon theory, that Jesus fainted under all the difficulties and then came back to consciousness. He was never really dead, so he never really rose from the dead, is nonsense. We'll deal with those two. There are many more. But those are the two that pop up in my circle most frequently as explanations. And instead, let's see what it might possibly mean that Jesus, who had been teaching and had been causing trouble to the Romans for a period of time, had been opening people's eyes to things they'd never thought of before, eventually offended enough people that he was tried in a court that was at best open to influence, if not a kangaroo court altogether, sentenced to death, was killed. And 3 days later, on the third day, rose from the dead. Well, what does that mean? There's a couple of things that I think it's worthwhile for us to think about. And the first one is that if Jesus doesn't rise from the dead, we have some really serious problems with what Jesus said in the Gospels, as they're recorded for us in the Gospels, before he died and was raised from the dead. Because what Jesus' resurrection does, as much as anything, is it gives that final verification that he was who he said he was. That he was not just a charismatic rabbi with a gift for stories, memorable stories. No one who's heard the story of the prodigal son or the good Samaritan will ever forget those stories. No, he was more than that. And his being raised from the dead gives proof to when he said, I am the Son of Man, which is a coded phrase for God, that he was right. Everything that Jesus said is given credence when you realize that this was said not just by this Jesus person who had a smallish following that sometimes was big and sometimes was small, had a core of followers who were sort of naive people so they'd believe anything. No, no. It gives credence to the fact that what Jesus said was what God said, because they were one and the same. Jesus was that unique combination of a fully human being and a fully God person brought together in one. And the mystery of the incarnation struck me this morning that I hadn't forgotten everything I learned in first year theology. That's called the hypostatic union. I'll take some of you back a bit. Theologians have a handy, if difficult to understand, phrase for everything. That's just one of them. When Jesus died and rose again, as he had said he would, everything before then has the weight of who he is added to it. Before that, he was just a teacher. A good one, perhaps. A little crazy at times. Some of the things he said are kind of goofy, if he's not who he says he is. But it was the resurrection that, for the disciples first of all, for his followers, that popped up with that sense of, aha, that's what he meant. We thought it might mean that, but it couldn't, because only God could say that. We sometimes forget how much of a jolt this was for the disciples, because we're looking at it backwards. We're looking at it from the perspective of the resurrection. Even during Lent, even on Monday, Thursday, even on Good Friday, we always have the reality of the resurrection for us to look back at things. Jesus' disciples didn't have that. And it's hard for us. It's really difficult to put ourselves in their place. But if you do, when you read what Jesus says, it's not as clear as we see it to be, because we know what it meant because he told us. We tend to look at the disciples from a particular perspective that doesn't do them any favors and honestly doesn't give us much credit either. When we expect the disciples to know what we know before it had happened, when of course they didn't. I've even heard people go so far as to say it's sort of odd that the disciples were sad that Jesus died. Of course he was going to rise again. Well, first of all, you need to go back and read the story of Lazarus to know about sadness. And second of all, it wasn't that clear. It was clear if you knew what was going to happen, but if you didn't know what was going to happen, it was ambiguous. But the resurrection removed all of that ambiguity, and everything backwards from there suddenly makes sense in a new way. That Jesus was saying, forgive the people who have harmed you, not because it's a good idea for your mental health, not because you'll be able to get things that you wouldn't otherwise, but because God says, forgive people if you want to be forgiven. That's a completely different statement than it would be good if you forgave people. Jesus' resurrection changed everything about what he said and put that whole weight of the Word of God on it that hadn't been there the same way for them before. And that's one of the things that I want us to pay attention to. One of the things that I want us to note on this Easter Sunday. There are lots of other things that are sort of peripheral to it. There's that amusing little bit where both the disciples are running, but the other disciple outran Peter. To me, that is the one thing that demonstrates that that disciple is the one who wrote the Gospel of John more than anything else. Because who else is going to put that in other than, yeah, Peter, everybody knows about Peter, but I beat him to the tomb. Now, Peter ran in first, but still. It just tells us more about the humanity of the people involved. It doesn't change a lot of what we think. But have you ever noticed the peculiarity of who encountered the risen Christ first? Women. This is another one of those things that we'll sort of take a step back and talk about what it doesn't mean. And it doesn't mean that it's a fraud. Because if people were going to create at that time, a couple of thousand years ago, or even 1800 or 1600 years ago, were going to create a fraudulent account of the resurrection, of all the things that might be in it, we don't know. But I'll tell you something that wouldn't be in it, and that's the witness of women. Do you know what kind of court cases women could give witness in back then? None. The testimony of a woman was completely irrelevant unless that testimony was backed up by the testimony of a man. And we can talk for a long time about how appalling that was and how far we've come and how far we still have to go, but that's not a sermon, that's something else. The fact that women are shown over and over again to have a kind of importance in this story is the thing that, in an almost ironic twist, helps us see that this was an actual account, because nobody would make that up. You don't make things up in a fraudulent account that throw suspicion on the accuracy of your account. But if you're simply telling the truth, you say what you saw, even if it may or may not make any sense. But what's the other thing that Easter means? Well, it's pretty straightforward and it's pretty simple. It's something that makes more sense to me now than it did years ago and continues to grow in significance. Easter means that death no longer has the last word. Of all the things I take from Easter, that's the one I now take more than anything else. All those other things are true. The ratification of Christ's divinity, the change that he made, that in the lives of the people who followed, everything that happens in the book of Acts, all of those wonderful things are all tremendously significant. I value them all, but the thing I come back to over and over again at Easter is that death loses. Up until then, yes, there'd been the occasional resurrection, Lazarus. All of us have heard stories. Perhaps we know someone who on an operating table or in a hospital or in an accident died but came back to life. Those are all true, but they're all different than this. Jesus took the worst that a fallen world could give him and beat it. That's where I take my comfort on Easter more than anywhere else. When I was younger, these things didn't matter as much. When you're young, you're immortal, you're bulletproof. The friends you have will be the friends you have forever. The situation in life, all those good things will continue forever. That's why people in high school think they've made their friends for life. And sometimes they have. But for the most part, as your circle grows, things change. And you lose some of that enthusiastic, naive perspective on the world when things don't work out the way you want them to, where justice doesn't happen, where you know it should and where you know it could, but it doesn't anyway, and where people you care about, people you love, die. And when that happens, you're changed forever. You're changed because that relationship's gone. You're changed because your perspective on the world has changed. And it's permanent. And without hope, it's a cause for despair. But Jesus said, among lots of other really great things, I am the resurrection and the life. Jesus said, when we go back and we look at what was recorded for us in the Gospels, Jesus said over and over again, I'm going to demonstrate that I, as God and human, am above the things of this world in a way that will become unmistakable. And I will demonstrate that I have control over everything, even death, which made no sense before that. And then it made sense. And of all the things that Jesus said, they come together in this whole idea of we become like Jesus. We don't become gods. That's something else. That's a heresy. But we become like Jesus in some profound and significant ways. And one of them is that at some point we too will enjoy resurrection. We will go from life to death back to life again, back to true life. And that's when those losses won't be losses anymore. That's when all of those people who have gone before you, those people who leave a hole in your life that will never go away. It doesn't mean that you're crippled by their loss, but it means there's something missing, and it will always be missing until that time when we are reunited in true life, the life that Jesus promised, the life that Jesus demonstrated is possible by going through the worst that death had to offer, which was dying and saying, that's not enough. I'm bigger than that. I'm stronger than that. If that's your best shot, you lose. Death loses. This time of the year, when we go through Lent and we go through Palm and Passion Sunday, perhaps we went to a Maundy Thursday service, perhaps we went to a Good Friday service, and we faced the reality of death in a way that we try to avoid. Or perhaps we're thinking of the funerals we've been to recently or decades past, whatever it might be. We think of those things. And on this Sunday, they all come together and say, those were terrible, but they're not the end. They're not the last word, because death doesn't get it. All of our culture will tell us that the only thing that matters is what you do when you're alive and how important you are and how many friends you have and all of those things. And there's nothing wrong with those things in and of themselves. But they miss the point. Because life, wonderful as it is not all there is. And death, terrible as it is, isn't all there is either. I don't know where your Easter has you this year. As you know, having recently lost a big part of my life, that's where my hope is today. I don't dismiss the reality of Jesus speaking as God and all that that means to me. But Easter Sunday says there is hope always. There is hope in the face that the worst the world can do, which is kill somebody. There is still hope. Easter doesn't mean everything's perfect, even with chocolate. The Apostle Paul says later on that we don't grieve as other people because we don't grieve without hope. But you notice he doesn't say that we don't grieve. He says we just don't grieve like other people. We all suffer loss. And perhaps those losses are near the surface for you this Easter as they are for me, or perhaps they're not. But what does Easter mean? It means hope. More than anything else, it means a hope that transcends the grave. And what could be possibly more hopeful than that? A hope that says no matter how bad things get, Jesus says there's something better. There's something bigger. It may take a while to get there, but you will. What does it mean? It means that everything about our lives has meaning, and so even does our death. Amen.